This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, Monday, 10th of December, 2018. Welcome to the show. I'm Julian Ng, and together with Joyce Goh. Joyce, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Julian. Okay, yeah, how are you?
All right.
It's Monday. How's your weekend?
Lovely. I love it. And ready to go for Monday now.
Well, you're all charged up. Quite surprised because I need another weekend to recover from last weekend.
Well, you had a busy weekend?
Yeah, quite Christmas stuff and birthday parties and all that.
Nice.
On top of just catching up on work as well. So yeah, just never enough time during the weekend. Yeah.
Today is International Human Rights Day, and yesterday was International Anti-Corruption Day, and in related to that was they had the rallies over the weekend as well, the anti-ICE rally, and yesterday was the human rights rally as well. So still two very important days. What are some of the stories that we'll be talking about in the next hour?
Well, Julian, starting from next year, secondary students will be allowed to bring computers to school to access digital textbooks. Now, is this really a good idea?
Interesting topic. And we will also explore government KPIs. That's the buzzword in managing an organization's success. Of course, they stand for key performance indicators. And the government is coming up with new KPIs, and we'll be covering a story for that on that. What are the things they should look at? Right.
Yeah, also we're going to be looking at eating out and how that could impact your favorite family recipe. So, you know, whether or not, be it how old you are, you might have a favorite family recipe that's passed down from generation to generation. Well, that recipe might end with the millennials because a survey suggests that millennials prefer to eat out rather than to prepare food at home.
Interesting, interesting story. Actually, these people got a lot of time. Go out there and do surveys and asking what people do with their time.
Yeah, well, maybe it could be to for their customers. They're paid to do the survey.
True. Yeah? There are a lot of paid surveys these days. You never know who's behind them. Right after this, though, we'll be talking about meetings. What is the right size of the meetings? Some of you out there may hate meetings, and there is an article about what is the correct way to conduct these meetings.
Yeah, and whether or not, you know, are meetings really productive?
Absolutely. Right. Now, stay tuned for that. We'll be coming back with that BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Don't Panic by Coldplay. 6:09, you're with Joyce Goh and Julian Ng on the morning run. And we love to hate meetings, Joyce, and with good reason. They clog up our days, making it hard to get work done in the gaps. And so many feel like meetings are a waste of time. So how can we make meetings more effective and regain control of our calendar and indeed of our lives? Paul Extel, who has worked for 35 years as a personal effectiveness consultant and wrote the book Meetings Matter, 8 Powerful Strategies for Remarkable Conversations, has 7 suggestions on how to make our meetings better. The first one, keep the meeting as small as possible, no more than 7 people. There's this phenomenon known as social loafing. Social loafing.
What's that?
Meaning that if other people can do it, if other people are around, I will just not do it, right? I will just not participate. So that happens when your meetings are too big and a lot of people who are in there would just leave it to other people. So to prevent that, keep the meetings as small as possible. I think Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who founded Amazon, he has this 2-pizza rule where the number of people you invite to the meeting, that 2 pizzas will be enough for them. If you invite more, those pizzas wouldn't be enough. And that's a good rule of thumb to follow because many meetings I attend have too many people.
I wonder whether he orders pizza for his meetings.
He literally orders pizza, right? That would be nice.
Well, in this article that we have here from Harvard Business Review, the condensed guide to running meetings, another thing that is recommended is to ban devices. I think that's a good idea. Because devices, they distract us, right? And this, you know, because when you're in a meeting, sometimes you have a laptop in front of you. So while you're listening, semi-listening, you're like checking on your email, you're like looking at your calendar. So it kind of distracts you. I think it's good to just go in with pen and paper
Yes.
And go in with an open mind. I mean, just so for that particular meeting, so everybody can just keep it short and leave.
But then it's a chicken and egg situation as well, because many people look at the devices because the meeting itself is boring, right? banning devices is a good way to do it. The other one is pretty obvious. Keep it as short as possible, no longer than an hour. I think organizations are guilty of just prolonging meetings for the sake of it. I think a lot of people like hearing their own voices. They keep talking about irrelevant stuff and it's extending the meeting longer than it needs to be.
They hog the mic, I guess. And also when they ask for opinions, I think some people they'll volunteer, which is great, but sometimes they go on and on and on. So yeah. Also, this other thing that is recommended is stand-up meetings are more productive.
I like that.
Yeah. Apparently it's 34% shorter than sit-down meetings, yet produce the same solutions.
Absolutely. I love it. Make sure everyone participates is the other suggestion, and cold call those who don't. This is like a classroom situation, remember? That brings back memory when I was dreaming in class and my teacher calls on me. So this is the same thing. I think it's very effective. But my favorite one so far is this one. Never hold a meeting just to update people. I mean, I hate this. You get into a meeting and the chairperson of the meeting just updates something which you can do on an email or on WhatsApp message. There's no need to waste time just by updating.
Yeah, and also another point is always set an agenda ahead of time. Be clear about the purpose of the meeting. So yeah, that's good so that you don't get sidetracked.
Yeah.
And you don't lose sense of what this meeting's about and then go out of the whole ambient of what you're supposed to talk about. I think that's good to have an agenda ahead of time and that everybody knows about it. Because I've walked into meetings before where I didn't even know what it was about. I was just told, oh, it's a digital meeting. And when I walked into it, little did I know that the rest of them were actually, they actually knew what it was. It was actually a more in-depth reason for the meeting, but I wasn't updated on that. So I walked in with totally blank, nothing on my mind. I just knew it was digital meeting. So I thought, oh, we're going to talk about digital plans for next year and all that. But little did I know that everyone else actually had put in their points into a doc, which I was not shared with as well.
Exactly.
I felt quite hurt by that.
Don't be hurt.
No, but I was quite surprised that I wasn't updated, but I walked in a meeting and I found that to be a waste of my time.
Because, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I guess talking about time wastage, being punctual to a meeting is very important.
Yes.
I mean, not part of this article, but punctuality is important because many people, even if they're 3 minutes or 5 minutes late, I mean, you're wasting everybody's time if you're not punctual. And an agenda always helps. People always, especially the chairperson of the meeting, always oftentimes forget to do that. And you enter the meeting feeling like you're being led by a headless chicken, you know. Now, next, we'll talk about millennials spending on food, whether they're eating in or eating out more. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Go Robot by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And you're with Julian Ng and Joyce Go on this morning of 10th December. We're talking about millennials yet again. Actually, we're talking about millennials versus the so-called traditionalists, i.e. The older people.
You and me.
So you and me. And me more than you, actually. You're still very young. You're still young. Now, so we're asking the question of whether in this age of convenience is cooking still a necessary skill to have, because the U.S. Department of Agriculture, otherwise known as USDA, released a report stating that the spending habits of different generations are vastly different, not surprisingly, and the millennials are spending more eating out than the older people like you and me. What do you think of this, Joyce? Is this something that, a kind of trend that is healthy?
Well, whether it's healthy is subjective, but it's definitely a trend. I think it's a sign of the times that a lot more people are eating out, and also, you know, they're also ordering a lot of food delivery because of the many options out there rather than to cook. I think because it's a lot more convenient and sometimes you just don't have enough time to cook. you know, it just takes up a lot more time.
Correct. And yeah. and even if millennials, I don't know if millennials are very, very, very busy people, but even if they do have the time, I guess it can be argued that now they want to spend time on experiences, right? Experiential.
Mm-hmm.
So be it, you know, going for a walk in the park, having meals with their friends.
Going to spin classes.
Exactly. It's something that is very hard to value with money. So they then use this to have an excuse to eat out more and therefore cook less at home. But I still do feel that, you know, cooking at home and eating in is a necessary part of our lives because it's more healthy to cook and it's good for your wallet, right? Because when you eat out a lot, you spend a lot of money and it could be bad for your finances.
Actually, yeah, you know what you cook, right? You know what you put into your recipes rather than eating out. You're not sure what kind of oil they use or what kind of meat they're using. Definitely a lot more healthier to cook your own meals because you know what you put into your meal. With regards to whether it's healthy on your wallet, it really depends though, Julian, on what kind of groceries you buy, what kind of food you put into your recipes.
Look, I give you an example, all right? If you like steaks, I like steak a lot and I do cook and I cook my own steak, right? Actually, I make quite a good steak, right? The experienced chefs and professional chefs may disagree with me, but I enjoy my cooking my own steaks. Now, if you bought a piece of steak outside, you can spend less than 20 ringgit, right, on a ribeye. If you went out to eat, that same plate costs 70 something ringgit. Similarly, if you went out to eat a bowl of noodles or a plate of noodles, maybe 6 or 7 ringgit today. But if you have a family of 2 or 5 or 4 or whatever, with 7 ringgit per head, you can actually put a lot of good stuff on the dinner table.
That's true. That's true. Well, I guess...
So I think the budgetary aspect is quite real. But then some people prefer to eat out because it saves a lot of time and it gives
and
a better experience.
Yeah, it's just convenient. Also, looking at just food delivery, I think we have a number of food delivery services in Malaysia. I think Foodpanda was a food first mover. We have GrabFood, you know, Honestbee. And interestingly, Julian, do you know, there's this list of Malaysia's top 10 when it comes to what people buy when it comes to food delivery. And number one is Ayam Goreng. Number two is bubble milk
tea. There you go.
That's weird. I have bubble milk
tea. Talk about the health aspects, right? I am goring.
It surpassed, bubble milk tea surpassed nasi lemak. To me, I think number one should be nasi lemak.
Yeah.
Number two is I am goring. Yeah.
What? Bubble tea? That's crazy.
Yeah. So that's one of the things that people actually order when it comes to food delivery.
Okay. I don't understand the difference between number one and number four. I am goring and fried chicken. There's no difference, right?
Yeah. Maybe I am goring is like local kind of I am goring and fried chicken's like stuff like KFC and all that. Number five is nasi goreng.
Yeah, I think deliveries have got environmental concerns as well. You know, all the packaging, all the plastic utensils and so on. Comparing that with what the millennials in the US buy, they spend more of their grocery on pastas and sweets, but less on grains.
Oh.
So it's like that paleo influence going on.
Okay, I think they're also spending more when it comes to for their grocery budgets. They're spending more on fish, eggs and nuts, less on white and red meat. I guess it's just more of the continued shift towards healthy eating. You know, they're having more and more, I guess, a bigger appetite for fruits and vegetables as income rises and you're allocating less for animal proteins.
If you have an opinion on this, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd really love to hear from you. Coming up next, we'll talk about the government, which is mulling new KPIs for the civil service, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I've Got a Rock and Roll Heart by Eric Clapton. I'm Julian Ng, together with Joyce Goh, and you're on the 6 a.m. stretch on the morning run. The government wants to put the service back into civil service. We're going to take a look at government KPIs. Chief Secretary to Government Ismail Barkas said the government is exploring the possibility of coming up with new KPIs by looking at the so-called 360 degrees perspective. Joyce, is it an understatement to say that this is going to be highly challenging?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But also depends on which departments, though, offer the government service. Because I must say some of them are really doing really well. It depends on what kind of KPIs they're going to set, though, as well. How do you measure a government's service delivery? I mean, what kind of KPIs would you suggest? For me, I think what's important is...
efficiency, right?
Yes. Yeah. Not to waste time. To me, wasting time is a big no-no. And also, efficiency and getting it right. You know, like whatever service that you're doing, getting it right, getting the information right, be it income tax, EPF and all that, you know, just no glitches when it comes to information and data.
Yeah, that's right. You don't want to spend 2 hours in a government department. You want to go there and just get out of there immediately because, you know, you have better things to do. You want to go home and cook for yourself, right? But
that's you, Julian, cooking.
But I do agree, Joyce, that over the years, if just a personal experience. Mm. I mean, no surveys done on this. Mm-hmm. The encounters in government departments have actually improved quite a bit over the years, right?
Correct.
I mean, and to me, if there is one, the awards for best government departments, right, would go out to, for example,
which ones?
EPF. I mean, right. I don't EPF's know if EPF is a government department, but the service in EPF is so good. The staff there have got all the information in their fingertips. The tax department, I mean, not surprisingly, because they want your money, is pretty efficient as well.
Over the years, I must say, because, you know, I've worked in tax before.
Have you?
Yes. And this was in 2002 when I first started working. And I must say, the service then versus now has improved so much. In the past recent years, I must say, it has improved. When I first started, I think there were a lot of hiccups as well, depending on which, it's also your luck, which officer you get.
Right.
You know, sometimes if the office is efficient, then good for you. I have some clients at that time, some of them, you have to wait so long just to get their case through at that time. But now I think it's improved a lot. Also, I think another department, Julian, is the immigration department when it comes to passports and all.
Yeah.
Recently, I had my own experience going into the immigration department to get a passport done, update some data, some photos there. And this was the one along Jalan Duta, and it's 1 hour in and out. So far, so quick.
1 hour,
very good.
Yeah. What I want to see is some online measures. For example, if you had an appointment with a government department, you make an online appointment. Because I've experienced this when I was working in Hong Kong, right? And I had to renew my work permit over there. You actually make an appointment online, book your time, and be punctual when you get there. And the moment I got there, I just got my meeting and I was out of there in a jiffy, right? So that kind of thing should happen in Malaysia.
Actually, that's a good idea because right now, I think for immigration, we had to walk in and I purposely chose after lunch, not school holiday. So like after lunch, afternoon, less people I find compared to in
Correct.
The mornings. Yeah, but yeah, I think online would be good. But the question is, they must enforce it correctly. If the person doesn't show up, then the next person online
have to have a backup plan. And I think a kind of penalty or punishment always works, you know. And I guess this, Joyce, what you're saying is that this relates to the overall responsibility and education of Malaysians in general, right?
The Malaysian time, right? Because everyone's always
punctuality,
like late.
Right? Punctuality, and it relates to all other things, like how we live our lives in this new Malaysia, right? So punctuality is so important. When you make an appointment, you make sure that you show up on time, and then if you don't, you can't blame government departments for not doing their jobs, right?
Work. So if they don't show up, what happens? So they'll just go on to the next person. I guess that would be the next.
Well, the next person wouldn't have arrived yet because if they were punctual.
Okay.
I guess if you can shorten government appointment times to, let's say, 15 minutes, the next person might arrive 15 minutes earlier and you could then immediately go into the meeting because of the other late person. So I like this idea, right, Joyce?
The KPIs,
The KPI ideas.
But it'll be tough as well to... I'm not sure how easy is it going to be implemented. How are they going to push that through? That'll be quite interesting to watch.
As with all things, the devil is in the details. Up next, we'll talk about how students will be allowed to bring computer devices into the schools, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, we are the champions by Queen. You're with Julian Ng and Joyce Goh. And Joyce, on the front page of the Star today, so many people are queuing up for the AFF Suzuki finals, right?
Yes, the photo.
Yeah, everyone is hopeful for Malaysian
victory.
Being
the champion? Yeah.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Students will be allowed to bring computer devices to school soon, and the Ministry of Education will allow students, especially in lower secondary schools, to bring their own computer devices. However, Deputy Education Minister Teo Ni Ching said that there are no plans to supply devices to students. Will this create a kind of inequality among students?
I think so. I'm not sure whether this is such a good idea in the first place.
What is not a good idea?
Students being allowed to bring computer devices to school, one. Secondly, if you're going to allow students to bring computer devices to school, and then you have the Deputy Education Minister saying, oh, but the ministry has no plans to supply these devices to students to use digital textbooks.
Okay, so why are you worried about these devices? Why are you worried?
Firstly, I don't know, I think it's going to be a distraction for the kids. I think some people say, oh, you know, why are you being so anti, you know, not keeping up with the times, this is all about digital right now, you know, going digital, reading.
You're the same person who holds on to print, right?
Yes, so that's true, Julia.
You still support physical textbooks.
Yes, I do. I still feel that something about reading a book is very different from reading from the digital text off a screen.
Right.
That's one. I'm also, for me personally, as a mom, I'm already trying to cut down the screen times for my kids. But my kids are very young. I think you're looking at secondary students. But if they're not going to supply, if the ministry has no plans to supply devices to students to use these digital textbooks, what about students who cannot afford these screens?
Yeah, that's a different matter altogether.
But that's not fair, though.
It's an important matter.
Yeah,
it's not fair. It creates this kind of us versus them mentality in school, as well as it's very inconsistent with the plans to roll out digital textbooks, right? So if you want to provide digital textbooks, then where do students, especially poor students, get their devices?
Accessibility.
And that's a good point. But going back to your first point, right, and I'm going to argue with you on this one, because we argued about digital versus printed media, right? Newspapers. Mm-hmm. And it's the same. Don't you think it's the same with textbooks as well? I mean, the digital textbooks would be so much more interactive, would be so much more interesting, and it captures the imaginations of students.
Reading can also capture the imagination. Sometimes
through textbooks? No.
Who knows? It depends
really?
On the syllabus. But it's proven that actually if you write down, you write on pen and paper, your brain processes and it actually instills more, it retains more of the information.
But if you're touching the screen, isn't that the same thing?
No, scientifically proven that if you write down, it actually, your brain remembers it better. But then again, why not hybrid? Maybe do digital and do a physical text thing. Yeah,
right.
Why not do a hybrid? But if they're going to go all out and roll out these digital textbooks for a syllabus, I think the ministry plans to introduce interactive digital textbooks for those in Form 3, I think in 2020. If they're going to do that, then they have to make sure all students have access to these kind of devices. If not, I mean, then forget it, right? Just stick to what everybody can afford, because if not, there's going to be a digital divide.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And just speaking from personal experience, looking back to the days when I was a student, I think in the classroom, I wasn't very attentive. And I'm just wondering whether it's all about the method of teaching as opposed to the media that's being used. For example, if you say that the textbook can be made to be very interesting, and that's a good point. In the same way that the digital textbook or the interactive online media can be made to be very interesting as well. But the point is whether we should actually improve on teaching methods in school.
Yeah, good point. And also, so the teacher has to be trained as well when it comes to delivering these kind of syllabus, be it through digital textbooks or be it physical form of books, right? This is why it's important that teachers are trained and they're equipped. They're up to date as well. And when it comes to syllabus, I think it's important, be it digital or not, to keep it interesting for the kids, you know, so that they will want to learn that lesson, want to learn that topic. Yeah.
We'll be talking about our forests after the news coming out next. And if you have any views that you want to give to us, 018-789-8899 is the number to WhatsApp or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll come back with you after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.